Welcome to the Interior Health Nursing Grand Rounds, a podcast conversation. I am your host, Allison Thomas, and on this podcast, we talk all things nursing and healthcare. I work as the clinical nurse specialist in the Trauma Services Network in Interior Health. Interior Health would like to recognize and acknowledge the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territories of the Dakal Dene, Tanaha, Inglekatma, Shawepam, Statliam, Sioux, and Chicoltean nations, where we live, learn, collaborate, and work together.
And today I'm so happy to introduce you to my dear colleague, Carly Cohen. So Carly, I'm actually just going to ask you to introduce yourself. Could you tell us who you are and a little bit about your background?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. So my name is Carly Cohen, and I am currently working for Interior Health's Emergency Services Network as a clinical nurse specialist. In itself is a bit of a broad role that I think is tough to conceptualize in our health authority, as well as I'd say just generally, because it can be so many different things. But how I got here is I started nursing in 2009. So I guess that'd be about 15 years ago now, which is kind of crazy. But my first love was high-risk obstetrics, and I went everywhere from being a practical nurse to doing my bridging program, practical nursing, to my BSCN, which I did in Hamilton, Ontario at McMaster University. So then I went in and did my critical care and emergency training. And for whatever reason, I thought it'd be fun, just for fun, to move from high-risk obstetrics to a level one trauma center as my very first emergency job. It was quite the change. I don't think I fully anticipated how different it would be. But after about a solid 6 months of very difficult days and lots of what I would call that kind of novice to expert and the fatigue that can happen. And Judy Duscher also has a really great theory for this kind of transition shock and what that can look like. And now that I understand that, looking back, that's definitely what I was experiencing. But I stuck with it, despite my close family and friends being somewhat concerned for my wellness. And over time, I ended up moving into rural emergency nursing and getting my rural practice certification when I moved out to BC, which was, I guess, in 2013. And yeah, then after some time, I decided that I wanted to do my master's, mostly to focus on what I thought I was going to be, maybe a clinical educator. But then in my master's program, I discovered that I had a love for project management and change management and quality improvement and doing sort of the more structural paperwork type side of things that I would say a lot of emergency nurses kind of go, oof, like, I'm glad somebody out there wants to do this. So that's how I ended up in this role, which it's been almost 3 years now. I was working in Kootenai Boundary Regional Hospital in the Emerge. And yeah, someone had mentioned that this position that I'm in now is open, and I interviewed, and here we are. 3 years has gone very fast, but I've definitely learned a lot. And I guess outside of my career life, I sing in a rock band and I'm a lead singer, and I play the ukulele and the flute. And yeah, I have a dog. Her name is Raven. She's wild, very much matches the energy of an emergency nurse, easily distracted. And yeah, I guess that's a little bit about me.
Amazing. And we're so lucky to have you. You're one of the people I get to work with the most. And so what a treat for me to be able to get to work
with you. The feeling is mutual.
Oh, thanks. That's kind. I asked you to come on kind of this time of year because October is Emergency Nurse Day and week, and we just really want to celebrate the work done in that care area, such important and challenging work that's being done all over our world, but in our region particularly. And so in the spirit of that, Carly, what are some of the things that you love about this care area, about emergency nursing?
Yeah, I think that I'm a person who has always had a lot of different things spark my interest. And I originally started off in a level one trauma center, as I mentioned, and that is quite intense, obviously. And you can end up with, like, working when you end up working in the trauma room, you can have one-to-one patients who are intubated and have that kind of critical care realm, but you can also be in the streaming or kind of what they call rapid assessment, even though it's probably not very rapid at times, depending on how busy it is. And you'll kind of end up in a little bit more of like an urgent care side of things and not have such high acuity patients, but have a higher volume. And I think that really, for me, describes a really great part about emergency nursing, is that while it is the same title, the world you can work in from day to day can change. And you might be a person who loves the fast-paced energy of a level one trauma center and really values critical care nursing, but also needs a break sometimes. And so you can have days where you're in a less acute zone, but still keep your focus on your primary passion. And also you can end up doing what I ended up doing, which is taking those emergency skills to the remote outpost, where I got the opportunity to use those skills, albeit luckily not as often, but become a resource for nurses who tend to work more in the primary care realm and have an opportunity to have that longitudinal care of people that you don't get to have in the emergency department. You don't necessarily know what happens after they get admitted or after they go home, and you're kind of just involved in their lives in a very short snapshot. And when you work in somewhere like remote practice or even rural emergency nursing, where, you know, it's a small community and you do tend to see people for a lot of what would ideally be managed in longitudinal primary care. So I think it's just, it's like a mixed bag of kind of a lot of different things. And you can kind of choose, especially in the climate now, like, we need emergency nurses everywhere. So it really is a great way to find your niche within an already niche environment. And I'd say the flexibility of that has really been the thing that's kept me in nursing. I, like most people probably at the end of the day, have experienced burnout and struggling with whether I wanted to continue emergency nursing or even being a nurse in general, just due to that kind of overwhelm at times. And the thing that's saved me every time is changing the context that I'm working in and finding a new passion within emergency nursing. And so I moved to Australia and I worked in emergency departments there as a travel nurse, which is also awesome. And that actually was working in one of the hospitals there. I was so happy that I enrolled in my master's when I was there, because I got this like reignited spark for nursing after working with some of the most amazing people. Shout out to Esperance Western Australia, in case this ever makes it there, because the people in that hospital just reignited a passion for nursing in me that I didn't even fully know that I had at that time anymore. And I wouldn't be here now if it wasn't for that. So, yeah. Yeah. And also just beautiful. The fact that, like, it's like a short part of somebody's life, but it tends to be, and this is in contrast to pyrus obstetrics, I worked on the postpartum unit. So it was typically like the best, if not one of the best days of a lot of my patients and their families' lives, and a lot of celebrating. Obviously, it doesn't always go like that, but on the postpartum unit, we are focusing on happy, healthy babies and moms. And that was an amazing world. And sometimes I would go to work and just be in a better mood when I left, which was awesome. And being on sort of the opposite side of that, at times people can be experiencing the worst days of their lives or the worst day, or it feels like it, at least in that time. And there is an opportunity to be a positive part of a really not great experience. And I think that that is really beautiful on its own as well. It's amazing to be part of anybody's life in a particular moment in time, but knowing that you have a chance to at least make something slightly less confusing or slightly less overwhelming and support people when they're really maybe not even able to support themselves is an honor, honestly.
No, I love how you put that, Carly. And I think you're the perfect example of what a kind of mosaic career you can have. in nursing, and I think about you doing your LPN and then your bridge. And by the way, those are the best nurses I've ever worked with, our LPNs who've bridged to RN. And you know, you get to see all sorts of different types of patients and have all sorts of different experiences. So it's really nice to hear a little bit about your background. So thanks for that. Now tell me, so what do you think, from your view of things, what are some kind of misconceptions that people might have about nurses working in the emergency department or that specialty area?
Yeah, I mean, I think that sort of how I already described how vast the world within emergency nursing can be. You know, when I would think about an emergency department or working as an emergency nurse, had I no context, I would just imagine, oh, like drama, life in the ER, or like those really intense shows where everything's always very hectic. And I mean, obviously in a lot of those shows, it's physicians who are running codes without any nurses around, which we know in reality doesn't happen, but we all work as a team. But I think that that can maybe be something that, like, I wanted that environment. I wanted something really intense. Mm-hmm. And I picked a level one trauma center, so I certainly had no shortage of exposure to that. But it's not like that, not even in a level one trauma center, because you're not going to be put in the trauma room every single day for every shift forever. No one would be able to sustain that. And even in the busiest centers, there are different varieties of patients and acuity mm-hmm. levels. So I would say that, you know, and also, I guess our education, it really focuses obviously on really critical scenarios because we don't see them that often. Uh-huh. So I think the misconception is that you're preparing for that because that's your everyday role and job. And it could be, but it's like a code, you know, when we're doing CPR and ACLS and running codes, we do it because it's high intensity and it doesn't happen often enough, thank goodness, mm-hmm. that you are practiced well at it without any kind of like simulation scenarios or practicing mm-hmm. your skills outside of it. And I think that's something really important to know. It's not to say you don't get exposure to that. And I think there's kind of twofold, that there are people who really want, like I did, that kind of level one trauma center experience. And you can for sure get that and train and do some of the most advanced critical interventions on patients, but you can also choose to work in a place that maybe is a sending hospital to a level one trauma center, and you might support a smaller community. And of course, you do need to train and be able to respond in the same way as a level one trauma nurse would, but the bulk of your work might not be in that realm of trauma after trauma or intubation after intubation. And so I think that for anybody who is excited about trauma life in the ER, and that's something that you're really interested in, like, that's amazing. And I would encourage you definitely to get into emergency nursing. But for the folks who are like, wow, I just don't know if I could handle that or sustain that. And it can be a very scary environment. I mean, when I first started mm-hmm. working in the emergency department, I thought everything was an emergency. I couldn't tell. I didn't know. And I didn't have the knowledge and experience that I have now. It's like figuring out a puzzle, like what's happening with this person, and you don't know. And only with enough data can you start to make educated guesses until mm-hmm. you reach a point of expertise where you're almost always kind of knowing and sensing what's going on. But you have an opportunity to still work within the emergency nursing world and do very important emergency nursing. It doesn't have to be level one trauma center, life in the ER. So if that's something that's maybe a hindrance or something that folks aren't sure about, I think it would be worth checking it out anyways. And on top of that, for me, when I went from maternity to emergency nursing, my thought was, well, even if I don't end up liking emergency nursing, I had just graduated with my BSCN and mm-hmm. I wanted to pick an environment that I knew would be transferable. So if I went in, and like, I love perinatal, to be very clear, but I had already worked in that world and my manager at the time really encouraged me to do something a bit more broad. And I think this is kind of why in the past nurses needed to go to medical surgical and do their stint for however long mm-hmm. before they would kind of specialize and I recognize that's not the environment we're in now. And understanding competency-based practice lets us know that there are many different environments that we can become skilled, competent nurses. And mm-hmm. I do think that the environment of emergency nursing is an excellent place to launch into whatever care area you might go in after that, even if you didn't end up wanting to stay in emergency long-term. Just the exposure and the type of work and the skills you learn and your ability to critically think through scenarios and, you know, function as a team. It's very team-based. It's all skills that regardless of where you end up will be useful in your nursing career. Mm-hmm. So take a chance.
I love that. That's perfect.
And And I would say the other one, like there probably are many, but something else that comes to mind is, and sort of in the same vein as, you know, the variability is that so much of what we see and in the emergency department, I think it was something like 40% of patients who presented to the emergency department in 2024 had some sort of mental health or substance use comorbidity. If that wasn't the reason they came, it was part of their overall care needs. And that's just the triage scores we know. So that doesn't mean that there aren't more. That's a very low kind of capture of a very specific population. And we do know that mental health and substance use has typically been stigmatized and folks have experienced harm and discrimination. And it's something that we are needing to still do a lot of work on to create safe and inclusive environments where people feel like they can share this information. But we need to also make sure that our nurses are prepared. Emergency nursing is not just emergencies. We know that our healthcare system has a lot of, you know, gaps or holes in it where people do end up seeking all sorts of different care needs in the emergency department that may or may not be, you know, that level one trauma. And it's imperative that we look at emergency nursing and our patients holistically. And I think that for folks who view, you know, their role as an emergency nurse being focused very much on emergencies, that over time, it's possible to get maybe jaded or frustrated and working within a system where you can see that it's failing so many folks that are coming through our doors can be burdening at times, and compassion fatigue is something that many people experience. It's, and I'm sure, no doubt, in the emergency department as well as other care areas. But I think that we need to just reframe things that we are here to provide whatever care is required for the person who's standing in front of us or sitting in front of us. And we have the opportunity to do that in a way that that person might not get that care at all anywhere else. And on top of that, we know statistically that emergency departments are only, if not the last point of contact for folks who have subsequently had a death related to an overdose or an attempted suicide and are struggling. And we were the last people that they saw. So having compassion and also making sure that you have the knowledge, skills, and ability to support people like mental health and substance use, pediatrics, emergency nursing. Like to me, all of that is together. We can't be siloed and think, okay, well, I'll do this mental health substance use module set and I'll be good to go. Like we should be taking that as seriously as we do our ACLS, BLS, like somebody experiencing, you know, some kind of emergency related to mental health is just as critical to respond to appropriately as a stroke or a heart attack that's happening right in front of us. And that, well, I guess that's kind of going into the next question too. I want every eMERGE nurse to know and to think about that, that we have an opportunity to impact not just the person in front of us, but then their experience in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And they might come back again because of that. And they might also share with their friends or family or someone else they know who's hesitant to come and seek care what a great experience they had. And all because of you, because of the team that's in front of them. And we have the opportunity to build back bridges that have been burned for centuries. And I think that we all do as nurses in general. I'm just obviously giving you my biased contextual opinion of emergency nursing. And so taking care of ourselves is also really important. I think that there's some level of empathy and compassion that at times can't be present. Like if you're in the middle of a level one trauma management, like you need to be paying attention to what's happening. And there's often not time, nor is it appropriate for you to think about anything outside of exactly what you're doing. But we need to remember to turn our feelings back on when we're done dealing with the like immediate life-saving interventions in front of us. And I think that for me was actually something I really struggled with in a level one trauma center after like days and days of trauma after trauma. People come and go so quickly and it's just so intense all of the time that it can be a reminder to check in with yourself and each other and how you're feeling and how you're coping.
I really like how you have framed that, Carly. Kind of what I hear is, we think of, quote, saving lives as resuscitation or these really intense interventions that we do for people. But I think what I hear you saying, and I think what's reflected in the literature as well, is these low acuity moments that also save lives, right? It's doing your suicide screen or your substance use screen. And we might think of those as small, maybe insignificant things, but actually those things are saving lives just as much or probably more than compressions on somebody's chest.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that we all need to have our intrinsic motivation for what we do, I think, or I'm at least in the cohort of people who I need to have reasons that I am doing things. And especially when it's a hard day or I'm tired or my dog ate garbage and keeps me up all night needing to go outside or whatever million other things that our lives throw at us outside of work, to just find your why. Why did you choose this? Why are you here? Outside of everything that can be challenging, like what about this can you find the sort of golden lining? I feel like gold more than silver. So, and that's the thing. It's like, you don't know, like I said before, you see people for a snapshot and you don't know afterwards. And so I like to believe that the impact that we have every day on patients and their families and their lives matters beyond just that moment. And I think that in that same sort of messaging, we have an opportunity to actively dismantle the system of oppression and discrimination and stigma by being a change agent every single day in our role. And rather than that feeling, I feel like it's possible to just focus on what you can do. And that's kind of, for me, what has been a really helpful thing. And my, like, personally, like my dad passed away from liver failure from alcohol use and substance misuse. And he grew up in a different generation. I don't remember a single person ever asking him anytime about substance use or about alcohol or about depression or about suicide. And he sought care all the time because obviously he wasn't well. And I think that if he was in this time now, or ideally where we'll be in the future, if we all continue to work at this, that it could have been different for him. Mm-hmm. Like he was alone and he didn't live in a world where questions were asked. And I can never know whether he would have answered, whether he would have gotten help or not. But just the sheer exposure to people asking in a compassionate, open way could have changed his life and therefore my life. I think that that's, I mean, because of my personal lived experience of having been present with that for a good chunk of my life, I especially have so much like space and compassion for people. And I just think about all the times that I witnessed like stigma and discrimination against him. And to me, he was my dad. So I just think that if we can all remember that someone's dad or that someone's brother, or it's not just their life, and we have an opportunity to at least try and try the same every time, even if you see them 30 times in, you know, a few months or more than that, like every single time is a new opportunity, and nobody should not have access to that. So, yeah.
No, I think you're exactly right. And thanks for sharing that with us, Carly. I'm wondering what else you have, because you have what I consider a bird's eye view of what's going on in our health authority, certainly when it comes to our emergency departments, but lots of other things as well. And from that perspective, you've shared already your hope that folks will maybe expand their view of emergency nursing to think about the whole person and this longitudinal care that can be provided. And I'm wondering what else you would want. So if you had the ear of every eMERGE nurse in your health region, what would you want them to know?
I think I'm sort of imagining myself as like a brand new eMERGE nurse and then an experienced eMERGE nurse and things that I'm trying to, it's hard to think back to that brand new me, except that I do think that, especially since I didn't understand what was happening at the time, that for all new eMERGE nurses, and this goes for any care area, but specifically speaking to new eMERGE nurses, you're going to feel overwhelmed. You're probably going to cry. If you're anything like me, I cried a lot in the first 6 months, mostly at home, sometimes in the locker room. And part of that was that I lacked the mentorship that I needed, not necessarily the preceptorship. The skills themselves were being shared and taught, but it was hard. And that doesn't mean that you shouldn't do it. We all have our own hards that we want. And at times I think that it can be, whether you have mentorship or support or not, can be the make or break. Like I could have not even continued in emergency nursing and or nursing altogether. Here I am speaking to you today, like 15 years in with a master's. And so that trajectory could have been so different for me. And I think that it's very important as new nurses and new eMERGE nurses to recognize that that is all very normal. It's normal to feel overwhelmed and to feel like you have so much to learn when you're seeing people with, you know, 15 years experience, just knowing everything they need to do all the time. But having patience and compassion for yourself as well and for the learning process is really important. And on top of that, on the flip side, as somebody who is more experienced, and you know, I think we have a lot of, there's quite a gap now where we have some very experienced nurses, many of whom are retiring or have retired, and a lot of younger, newer nurses who maybe not just new to emergency nursing, but new to nursing in general. And it is our moral and ethical job to support new folks, to create a safe and welcoming and supportive learning environment, no matter how tired we are, or no matter, you know, how tough the day may be. And that, like, you have the hands in the future of emergency nursing, like, in your palms. You have the opportunity to make or break somebody's career and therefore like our emergency care system. So I think that's the important part. Like, we all need to do our part to support each other. And especially in the way that the climate is going now, we are short staffed and we are losing a large chunk of our very experienced nurses due to baby boomers retiring. And there's going to be a gap. And that is just how it is. And I think in that same way, it is imperative. I think that we've typically approached, especially in places like the emergency department, but probably in general in nursing, like you learn on the job. So you get a certain amount of foundational education, maybe some clinical, and then you learn from someone like myself or nurses in the eMERGE who have had years more experience than me. But we're going to not have that. We already don't in the way that we used to. And so I think that it is imperative that we all take it upon ourselves to advocate for our ongoing professional development and education. And, you know, whether that be that we participate in things independently, or we ask for things in our local areas, or we request things from our educators, like, we really do need to ensure that professional development is ongoing and, you know, kind of never lose that constantly learning approach, because we are going to need it. And the baseline education is not enough to make up for the gap that is currently existing and going to continue to exist in our experience versus newer emergency nurses. So I guess that's a bit of a prompt to educators and to everybody. We are all, like, doing our best. And I think that we all just need to get as much education in as we possibly can and use each shift as an opportunity to learn something, and just kind of keep that always learning growth mindset.
Exactly right. And now, Carly, before I let you go, I have kind of a two-sided question. So the one side is, if there's somebody listening who is thinking, oh, okay, yes, I always wanted to go into emergency nursing, well, what would be their approach? Do they look for a specialty education posting and then apply on that? Or how do they get their foot in the door?
Yeah, I would say that kind of depends. If I'm speaking generally, like, not necessarily within, I mean, imagine I'm talking to British Columbia, and for me in Ontario, it was a little bit different. But I would say that if there is a specialty education funding line that happens to come up and it's something that you want, that's great. I think that there may be some, I think, concerns about, like, return on investment and folks needing to then sign up to work for 1 or 2 years. And that could be a deterrent. I totally understand that approach, but I could see how, I don't know, if I didn't know emergency nursing, if I would feel comfortable signing up for that in case I didn't end up wanting to stay. I'm not saying that, obviously, that didn't happen for me, but it can be a commitment, or maybe you don't want a full-time line, or whatever that looks like. So I would say that there are so many different educational institutions that offer specialties that you can do part-time or on your own time. If you're coming from a different area, like maybe critical care or somewhere else, it's possible to also sit exams for portions of the education that you already. So I could sit the BCIT program in its entirety and write the exams and have my BCIT emergency certification if I wanted to right now. I've obviously come from a different province and had hands-on training there more. So I would say either route is good. It just depends on what you're comfortable with and what commitments you're looking for. I think it can be intensive at times to do a full-time program, but you also get the benefit of being paid for your education and having paid clinical shifts. Whereas if you do something maybe more at a distance, you might need to go to clinical like we did in school for free. I'm putting that in air quotes, even though you can't see me. So I would say either way, like, you could just plug away at courses, and maybe you're working in an area where you can apply some of the things that you're learning. Maybe there's an opportunity to get your telemetry certification and, you know, go back and do more, like, or maybe move into a high acuity or a step down unit and start applying more of your kind of critical skills that you're learning in school. So I would say those are the approaches. And overall, depending on where you've worked in the past too, like, there are opportunities to bridge as, like, let's say I'm a surgical nurse. So I do know that they're looking now in interior health to finding ways to bridge med-surg nurses to the emergency department, where you don't need to do all of the schooling up front before you can start practicing in the clinical environment. That's how I was trained in Ontario. So I started off in what we'd consider the kind of lower acuity zone. So your admitted med-surg patients don't, it's like a 1 to 4 or 1 to 6 assignment. They don't require telemetry or anything kind of more advanced. And I started there, and then I would take additional modules and additional modules until I did my like electrophysiology and telemetry. And then I spent some time in the electrophysiology lab. And then I started taking patients on cardiac monitors and working in the cardiac room, they call it, which is where we basically get all our hot STEMIs and sometimes stroke in the windows and people who are experiencing maybe like an aortic dissection or something. So all the way to people who have had an end STEMI and are probably going to go home, but are stable on telemetry and need to be monitored and don't have a bed upstairs. And then in time, I think it's about a year before I had gained enough knowledge, skill, training, et cetera, to then do my trauma room training and then work in the trauma room. And obviously I'm describing a tertiary center where all of that career laddering was possible. And I recognize that that's not the case for the majority of care areas that I've worked in since then, where, you know, it might be one of two nurses, but I do still think that there's an opportunity to maybe take on some of that learning while you're still in a different environment that isn't the emergency department and start applying it or if you're not sure or if you want to build it over time.
Great.
Yeah.
And then how about, so for new and experienced eMERGE nurses, what are some of your favorite resources you could point them to? I believe there's a national association. Is there a national conference that happens every year? What are your favorite places to look?
Yeah, so, well, actually, I just kind of finished or I'm wrapping up the National Emergency Nurses Association. I was leading the federal working group to update our standards for emergency nurses. And that's really, while it's an association and not a governing body, that is really the go-to for what is expected of an eMERGE nurse. How do we practice? What are our standards? What are our competencies that expand across the country, not just within a province and then not just within a health authority, knowing that there are different controls and practice. So NENA would be a place that I would go. And so NENA does have a conference every year. And that's a place that is great to go to. There's lots of emergency nurses teaching emergency nurses and research and innovative new topics. And it's a very like inspirational conference, I would say. It's something that's really great to reignite and or help you find even a new niche passion within emergency nursing. There's also the Canadian Association for Emergency Physicians, so CAPE, which is like kind of the physician counterpart of NENA. They also have an annual conference, and I was fortunate enough to go last year. It was in Toronto, and it was great. It's definitely had a lot of really fascinating research, but also some very inspirational topics around access and flow and emergency department reform and looking at changing the way that we do emergency medicine in general. And it was a very inclusive environment for many different types of people, like nursing students, med students, physicians, etc. So those would be two conferences that I would definitely recommend. And then also ECBC, which is our Emergency Care BC, which is a newer formal group, but they have all of the most up-to-date kind of resources, guidelines. There's articles on there. And so if you're ever looking for sure, peer-reviewed, high-level evidence to help guide your practice, or you just want to learn about something new or different, that would be where I would go to check for guidelines, as well as BC Children's and Child Health BC for more pediatric-specific content. I could list a lot, probably.
And I'm not trying to leave any out at all, but that would probably be some good places to start.
Yeah, that's great, Carly. That's some reputable group to get people started if they're looking for something to dig their teeth into. That's super. So thanks for that. I think we're kind of getting towards the end of our time together. Is there anything outstanding that you didn't get the chance to say that you really want to make sure you say before you leave?
No. I just think that I ended up wanting to have more of a voice as an eMERGE nurse. Like I felt like there was a lot of things to advocate for and ways that we found to maybe improve something, whether it be big or small. And I thought, okay, well, I should do my master's and then I can sort of be at that, you said, like you said, the bird's eye view of things. Mm-hmm. But what I've realized being in this position now, especially, is that we are, like, I am looking to individual sites and frontline nurses and frontline physicians and managers and educators, the people who are eating, breathing the everyday work, for that information. So mm-hmm. don't ever underestimate the power of your voice. You know, it might feel like I'm just one person or I'm in this small emergency department and what kind of change, but you don't know what everybody else is saying. And if there are collective concerns coming forward, like, we get lots of information, whether it be something to celebrate or something that's a room for improvement, to our network. And yes, as a plug, if you are listening to this and you're an emerge nurse, please reach out to the emergency services network should you have any questions or concerns. We offer practice support and guidance, and we facilitate development of standards and processes and policies that maybe need revising or maybe need to be created that aren't created yet. And that is how we get that information. So if it wasn't for everybody at the front lines, we could do things that we know are important. But what matters is doing what's important, not just for our patients, but from the lens of frontline staff. So like, reach out, say it 20,000 times, I guess, if necessary, and just know that we are listening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Are you suggesting, Carly, that the people doing the work are the ones who are the experts in their
own? 100%. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Excellent. I mean, I happen to have more recent clinical experience, but yeah. I'm also not going to sit here and pretend like I know more about the day-to-day work and the experience and environment than someone who is working there every day. Like, I already see that not necessarily being my lens anymore, even though I just left frontline clinical, like, 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the important part, is like, the eyes and ears and the people living and doing it every day are absolutely the experts. I'm just here to maybe take all that information and do, like I kind of said in the beginning, like, oh, the paperwork and et cetera, and the research and the literature. And I love that. That's why I'm here. But like, so let me do this sort of lifting of putting that all together in a neat little package. But none of that's possible without the people doing the work as the experts.
Yeah. Great. Amazing. All right. Well, I would like to just, on behalf of myself, and I think on you also, Carly, happy Emergency Nurses Month. We are so appreciative of every emergency nurse in our region, the work that they're doing every day, day in, day out, saving lives, but also improving people's lives and strengthening their communities. So we're so grateful, and your work doesn't go unnoticed by us. And I just thank you for all the work that you're doing. And Carly, thank you to you for all the leadership that you provide to those nurses doing the important work for our patients at the bedside. So happy Emergency Nurses Month to you, Carly.
Thank you. Happy Emergency Nurses Month to all of the emergency nurses out there, and any of the prospective nurses who might want to come to the emergency nursing world after this podcast.
Join the team.
Come over. It's nice.
Awesome. That's so great, Carly. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
As always, I just want to say thank you to the Interior Health's Professional Practice Office for supporting this project. And if anyone has any questions, comments, concerns, they can email us at professionalpractice@interiorhealth.ca. That's all for this episode. Thank you for joining us today. We know you're busy and your time is valuable. Thank you for spending some of it with us. Thank you for your commitment to your profession and to your patients, and being a part of the journey of building a culture of excellence around nursing in our health region.